Hello, I'm Oliver Colling, and this is the 100th episode of My 70s TV Childhood. Welcome to a very special episode of My 70s TV Childhood. It is our 100th episode, and they said it wouldn't last. I think that's worth celebrating. Our first episode was released to an unsuspecting world in September 2020, and since then we provided a safe space for those of us who remember growing up in Britain during the 1970s, and also a space to celebrate the fact that we watched a lot of television as children. The 1970s was a golden age for television. There wasn't much of it, but what there was proved a great source of comfort and a huge cultural reference point for us, our families and our friends, as the UK went through the painful process of adapting to industrial decline and waking up to the fact that, well, we weren't top dog anymore. For me, and judged by the number of you who listen to the podcast, many of you, we look back very fondly on what was our childhood. It was a happy time, a playful days, few worries, and the comfort of our favourite television shows to keep us entertained. September 2020, when we launched the podcast, feels like a long time ago, never mind the 1970s. In the UK, we were emerging from a long period of lockdown following the global pandemic. But what we didn't know at the time was that we'd be heading into more lockdowns, and then into, the tier system, which I found a bit difficult to understand, and to be honest, I can't really remember how it worked. Was tier one good or bad? And was it tier one, two, three? Was there a tier four? Seems like a very long time ago. But through it all, we had the My 70s TV Childhood podcast to comfort us in our time of need. Just looking back over the 100 episodes, it shows we've covered an awful lot of ground, from early episodes featuring Watch With Mother, The Banana Splits, and in a gripping episode, what I and my family watched on TV on a Saturday night. Since then, we've ranged through such diverse subjects as public information films, Blue Peter, 70s sitcoms and game shows, 70s adverts, and spent time looking at classic shows like Grange Hill, Coronation Street and Thunderbirds. We've had lots of interesting interviews, not least with the Governor, Colin Edmonds, a former joke writer for Bob Monkhouse, and we've had hundreds, possibly thousands, do you know, I haven't counted them all, perhaps I should on a dark winter's evening, of comments via our blog, email, Twitter stroke X, Facebook and other social media. And along the way, we've been shortlisted for Best TV and Film Podcast at the UK Independent Podcast Awards. Oh, and most importantly, I think we've all had lots of fun along the way. I'd like to say a big thank you to all of you who've listened, whether you've been a long-time listener or whether this is the first time you've heard us. It's all down to you that we've been going for so long. Without you listening, there wouldn't be a podcast. And my rambling on about the 1970s and the television we watched would be pretty pointless. You are all wonderful, and I really hope that I can keep you listening for at least another 100 episodes. Oh no, some of you say. We've also had a few special editions, like the interview we did with Colin that I mentioned just before. We're up to 4 Christmas specials, and we had quite a fun show involving several podcast creators when we celebrated Doctor Who's 60th anniversary last year. And don't worry, we have a few more specials in the pipeline. Oh, and we've also introduced our fortnightly quiz, which I know many of you enjoy. You enjoy it particularly if I don't make any mistakes with the questions, which I have been prone to do. Anyway, if you do want to get in touch, you can do so via our blog at www.my70stvchildhood.com. Leave a comment, as I say, on any member of our vast social media sites, or just email me, oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. We would love to hear from you. Looking back at our 100 episodes, I think it's interesting to look at which have been most listened to. Our most popular episode is from May 2022, and was the one featuring Trumpton, Camberwick Green and Chigley. Is there another group of TV shows that bring back such happy memories? And yes, I do know they were made in the late 1960s, but they were shown again and again during the 70s and indeed the 80s, and are firm favourites for many of us. The next most popular episode we produced was from October 2022, when we remembered Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads. It's fascinating to see how many people loved that show, and incidentally, it's one of the episodes I've had the most number of emails and comments about. So its impact on us all, even though many of us are quite young, must have been considerable. But enough of nostalgia for the past. Sorry, what? Oh, I see, yes, I suppose that is sort of the point of the podcast. We've had 100 episodes, which does sound like a lot, and actually feels like a lot from my perspective. But you know, I do have one question. Norris, is that a record? Record Breakers first screened on BBC One in December 1972 and became an instant hit. The idea came from Blue Peter, of all places, which had featured attempts at breaking world records, which were adjudicated on by Ross and Norris McWhirter, the twin brothers who came up with the idea for the Guinness Book of Records. Now, for some of our younger listeners, or our older listeners who might have forgotten, the Guinness Book of Records was massive in the 1970s. The whole idea of proving who was the smallest, the tallest, fattest, thinnest, or whatever Roy was singing about in the opening theme tune, was an addictive pastime. Now don't forget, let's go back in time a bit. There was no internet to settle a family argument, and so the only way to find out who held what record was to look in the book itself. The McWhirters came up with a hugely successful formula as the book was reprinted annually. So there was a lot of effort from potential record breakers to make sure they'd broken the record, or indeed still held it, by the time the publication deadline had passed for that year's book. The whole thing, apparently, had been inspired by Sir Hugh Beaver, the managing director of Guinness Breweries, in the early 1950s. He'd been on a shooting party in Ireland, as one does, and had an argument with a fellow shooter over what the fastest game bird in Europe was. The winter evenings were so flown by there as well. He thought it was the golden plover, while his companion swore it was the red plover. Apparently it's neither, but having spent an evening in the library of the big house where the shooting party was staying trying to find an answer, he realised he couldn't, and the idea for the definitive book of records was born. The McWhirters were recommended to Beaver, and they put together the first edition in the mid-50s, and the rest is history. Whole generations were inspired to eat huge quantities of hot dogs in a few minutes, or to try and cram as many people in a phone box or London taxi as they could, and all sorts of interesting feats of endurance and skill were inspired. And all of that was perfect for children's television. The host of the show was Roy Castle, who became known to generations of children via Record Breakers through the 70s, 80s and early 90s, before his death at a tragically young age. Roy's cheerful and infectious enthusiasm for all of the record attempts, and for just being a great entertainer, made him hugely popular. He also had a starring role in Carry On at the Khyber, for which he's very well loved, but enough of that and back to Record Breakers. The format of the show was reasonably predictable. Roy would present a number of features on world records, some historical, which I still remember, like the world's tallest man, the American Robert Pershing Wadlow, where we would meet along the way Christopher Greener, who was then the tallest man in Britain, and he would help Roy tell the tale of Wadlow, who from memory was 8 foot something, so a pretty big deal. Yeah, I didn't mean the pun there, but you know what I mean. We then have something a bit more contemporary, like a world record holding athlete who would be politely questioned by Roy and asked about the secrets of their success. We'd also have a question and answer session with the McWhirter brothers, where the audience would ask them questions about world records and who held them. The brothers were incredibly knowledgeable on the subjects, and I don't remember them ever being caught out by anybody, which in itself must be something of a record. And then we'd have some of the most memorable features of the show, which would feature efforts to break a record from the Guinness Book of Records. These range from small-scale things like getting people into a London taxi, as previously mentioned, to things like speed records for tap dancing, the record for which was attempted and broken on the show by none other than Roy Castle himself. There were odd records, and there were more mainstream ones, like athletes running non-competition distances or lifting heavy weights in a particular way. And it was all great fun. All of the record attempts were adjudicated on by Ross and Norris McWhirter, who would then pronounce very seriously whether the record had been beaten or not. All in all, it was gripping TV for young children. In 1975, Ross McWhirter was murdered by two IRA gunmen, and the McWhirter twins were no longer the adjudicators of all things Guinness Book of Records related. Following the assassination of his brother, Norris continued with the book and with Record Breakers on his own. It was a shock for all of us who love the TV show, and it opened up another world to me as a young child, where people who appeared on our favourite TV shows were not just figures on the screen, but they were real people who could actually live and die as well. The show announced Ross's death and explained it in as, well, I guess as sympathetic a way as they could to its child audience. But for me, I remember it was still a big, big shock. But back to the main feature, the world records. I remember lots of them, but this one in particular shows how industrious those in the show could be, but also demonstrates the boundless enthusiasm that Roy Castle had, and also the importance of Norris in making sure all record attempts were above board. This one's also very British, I have to say.
A really incredible sight. This whole floor is covered with thousands and thousands and thousands of dominoes, all on their edge, all in different patterns. There's loops, circles, straight lines, even words. And the person who's been setting these up, ready for a new world record attempt, is Mike Kearney from Leeds University. Hello, Mike. Now, how many dominoes are you hoping to topple?
33,333.
All the threes?
That's right.
And how many do you still have to set up?
One.
Double. Just the last one?
That's right.
Well, Mike, if you'd like to put the last domino in place, keep a steady hand. Don't say I'm going from the wrong side. That's it. That's the 33,333rd domino, and that's the first.
Right.
So, on your spots, get set, go! There they go, that's quite fast, isn't it? That's made the first corner.
It has.
Whee!
Look at that one.
Yeah. What gave you the idea of trying to beat the domino record, Mike?
Well, I was in New York for a holiday. My parents live there. And I was down near the bottom of the Empire State Building. There, the Guinness Book of Records exhibition on there, and they had a videotape of the 15,000 record being put up. And hence I thought, well, that'd be a good Rag Week stunt. So when Rag Week came along this year at Leeds, I had a bash. I didn't do it that time, but I'll do it this time.
Oh, that's lovely. Look at that. So you set all these up yourself, did you?
Yeah.
Got sore knees?
Certainly have. Yeah, sore backside as well.
Yeah. How do you go about counting the dominoes as you set them up?
Well, the guys off on the stage, put them into bags of 1,000 originally, and then they refine it to trays of 200s accurately afterwards.
Yeah.
And the trays are ticked off from two different sheets of paper as they brought out, so we get double check. Plus the fact that as I finish a tray off, I make a chalk mark, so that we get we effectively have three checks on the count.
Yeah. It's coming up close now, isn't it? Norris, how far are we?
22,000 now.
Get it!
That's marvellous, the way you've written out the record breakers as well.
Coming up now to 30,000.
Now, what about this bridge?
Here it comes. Yep. They constructed it just this morning, half an hour before we actually put it up.
Yeah. Here we come now, here we come.
$33,333.
Hey, what about that? I've just checked with Norris, see that they all went down all right, did they?
I'm afraid that one of them actually fell, bounced back. We won't eliminate that one, but there was a little side loop where they were double banked, where 67 didn't fall, so it'll be listed as a world record of 33,266.
So that's still easily the world record, isn't it?
Yes.
Congratulations, that's it. That's the world record-breaking domino. 33,266. And Mike, you're the domino-toppling record-breaker.
That's a bit longer than most of the clips we use on the podcast, but I love that clip for all sorts of reasons. Roy manages to make even the dullest of moments during the domino-toppling sound very exciting, and Norris McWhirter sounds so serious as he highlights the fact that 67 of the 33,333 dominoes didn't topple. But it's still a record breaker, and we all cheered, and we all know that for decades afterwards. Students around the world, in the US, in Japan, were all inspired to do domino toppling, and I think the world record must be now at millions or something, because I've seen so many over the years. But they really don't beat the one in Leeds in 1977. And what of Roy Castle's own entries in the Guinness Book of Records? Apparently he broke 9 world records during his run on the show, including the world's fastest tap dance.
17, he's done 17 now, that's 7 seconds. That's faster than 16. A fantastic performance. He's up back to 12, now he's up to 11. 16 again, that equaled the world record. 17 is faster, 18, 22, 23, 24. That's fantastic, it's a 24, that's enough, you shattered it. Well, that was 24, which is 1,440 taps in a minute. So you are a record breaker.
On the show in January 1973, he tap danced at an average of 1,440 taps per minute, or 24 taps per second, which is incredibly ridiculous when you think of it. Amongst other records, he completed the world's longest wing walk in 3 hours 23 minutes, and he broke a record for playing the same tune on 43 different instruments in 4 minutes. He also helped with lots of others, I remember, like the largest number of people tap dancing in one place at once, and lots of other marvellous but sometimes trivial achievements. Record Breakers was inspirational, and I and my school friends were always trying to think of records we might break, so to get in the Guinness Book of Records and then to appear on the show, but we could never come up with anything exciting enough. I'm not sure as well that any of us fully appreciated that breaking a world record wasn't that easy either, and required hours of practice, some skills, and, what else do you need to be a record breaker? Any thoughts, Roy?
Dedication, 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 that's what you need. If you want to be the best, if you want to be the best, dedication.
If dedication is genuinely all you need, then Roy Castle certainly deserved his world records and his status of one of the heroes of 1970s kids TV. Not only did he smile and entertain us at every step, but he also seemed like a really nice man. And that in itself is a good record for me. So that's it for our 100th episode. Is it a record, Norris? Well, perhaps not. But thank you for listening. Not just to this episode, but for all of our episodes stretching back over the last 5 seasons. And don't worry, there's plenty more to come. Join us again next week for the next edition of our quiz, and in a fortnight for the next edition of our podcast. In the meantime, don't forget to like, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, and to tell your friends. You can also get in touch via our blog at www.my70stvchildhood.com, on our social media sites as mentioned earlier, or you can just email me, oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. So take care, remember that dedication is all you need to be a record breaker, and join me again soon for more from My 70s TV Childhood.